Hello, everyone, and welcome to the One Board Podcast. I am Rick White, and joining me, as always, is a man that orders his hash browns at Waffle House bearded and waxed. This is Ryan Gutowski. Ryan, how are you?
I like the hair and the consistency of the bearded and waxed hash browns. I think that's why I love them so much.
Some people might report that as a health or safety violation, and you're like, bring it on. Come on, like, can you just take your hairnet and shake it over my food?
I feel like it's the only way to order them. You know, do you order them differently?
Yes, very much so. The reason I thought of hash browns today is because I was at Waffle House like half an hour ago, and I got a hash brown cheesesteak bowl.
What is that?
Which was eggs, cheesesteak, cheese, and onions all in a hash brown bowl. And I also got a biscuit and gravy and put some of the gravy in there.
That's
and
amazing.
Had some salsa in there. That's salsa and like country gravy are a very interesting mix of flavors.
Yeah.
I don't know that I would recommend that you do both. Like, do half the bowl one way and half the bowl the other.
Interesting.
For two different flavor profiles. But it was quite tasty, but I'm kind of in that, like, I have no expectations for movement for the rest of the night.
Yeah.
So,
kind of like you kind of gorge yourself on oils and fats, and now you're just kind of laying there lethargic with a podcast mic in front of you, right?
Yeah, that's pretty much how it works. Nice. I'm actually lying down on the ground, fetal position.
This is going to be a good episode. I can smell it. So,
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if you could.
Yeah. So, Rick, we are going to talk about what we've been playing, and then we've got actually an interview with David Lee of A La Carte Games, and you have a review for us. Isn't that right?
Yes, I do. I'm looking forward to it, Ryan. But why don't you, as the main gaming man, why don't you give us a little insight into what you've been playing lately?
Yeah. We've been playing a lot of games this week. It's been a good week for just sitting down as a family and getting together and gaming. And then we had some friends that came over throughout the course of this week, which was really nice. This week we checked out Monster Crunch for the very first time. This is a brand new game from Big G Creative. And this is actually a game that is hitting Target stores this week. So if you like what you hear, you can head over to your local Target store or go to Target.com and order Monster Crunch. Essentially, Monster Crunch is the monster series that we all grew up with. I loved Boo Berry. That was my favorite. And then I wasn't a big fan of Count Chocula, but actually as I've tried it as an adult, I actually like it a little more than I remember. So you got Frankenberry, and then you've got the two classics, Fruit Brute and Yummy Mummy. These are two classics from the, I think, late 80s, early 90s that they reinstituted them as this monster cereal a couple of years ago. So you've got these five different monster cereals, and the components for this game are really, really cool. You get this little cereal bowl, little cardboard cereal bowl that lays flat, and then you are discard. Everybody gets a deck of 36 cards, and kind of like Fuji Flush style, where you're trying to follow. It's kind of like a trick taking game, I would say. So let's say, Rick, you play a two. I have to try to play a two or higher from my hand. Okay, so you have 12 cards in your hand. Each of the hands that you play, you play a total of three hands over the course of the game. It takes about 25-30 minutes. And so you're just following the person who played before you with the same number or a higher number. And I guess the catch with this game is that you can actually use milk. You have these little cardboard milk tokens, and you can actually combine two cards together to make a higher number. So the highest number in the deck is 12. But if you take two 11s, you can make a 22. You know, so you can kind of seal around by getting a 22, forcing everybody else to pass, and then being the new starter for the next round and shedding some cards. The game is really cool. The game plays, I think, kids probably as young as 7 or 8 could probably play it. But I really, really like it. And I was surprised. Erin liked it far more than I thought she would. I like it for the nostalgia reason, but also gameplay is really good. And it's a light game. Monster Crunch is really cool. I dug it.
Awesome. So is there Like, is there a game out there you might compare it to for people that may be kind of listening to it? Like, for some reason, I got a Fuji Flush feel, but maybe yep. I'm mishearing you.
No. Fuji Flush is probably the thing that's closest, just because, you know, you could say it's kind of Uno-based, where... But you don't have any that take that mechanism, you know, of something like Uno. But you're playing, you know, if the person to the right of me plays, there's some cool strategies. Because if the person plays a three, I could play a three if I have a three in my hand. Or I could play a little higher to kind of force everybody up. So I might play a nine. Then the next person has to play a nine or higher. So I kind of skipped a bunch of numbers in the middle there. Or I can just go for broke and... The person next to me plays a three, and I play two tens with a milk token and mm-hmm. get 20, you know? And so in a case like that, I kind of forced everybody at the table to either jump up and start using their milk tokens, or I've kind of sealed the deal for me to end that round. So gotcha. there's some of, I don't know, there's enough strategy there that you cannot go on. I thought about this the last game we played. We played it four or five times this week. But you can't go into just robot mode of they played a three, I'll play a three. They played a four, I'll play a four. You can't do that because there are certain times that you say, okay, I'm going to jump a bunch of numbers up, or I've got a bunch of low cards. Maybe I'll use the milk to combine my low cards. This way I don't have those in my hand anymore. I'm not going to get stuck, you know? Right. So it's a fun game. It's really good.
Awesome. And I think you had, I mean, this was cereal-based. I think you had another food-based game that you guys broke out this weekend.
Yeah, it was all food all day. We played some Burger Up, Aaron and I. This is one of our favorite games to just play the two of us. Burger Up is from Rule and Make Games, and we just sat around and played, I think Saturday morning, we played Burger Up. We haven't played it in a long time. Aaron actually did the review for Burger Up probably a year and a half ago or a year ago. I don't know, but it was, a year and a half ago. That was one of her favorite games. She bought it for me. The funny part is she bought it for me for Christmas, and then she liked it so much that we played it, I think, 9 days in a row after the first of the year, that Christmas that I got it. She was like, another game of Burger Up? I'm like, yes, another game of Burger Up. I mean, we ran that game into the ground for a while. But it is such a good game. You're essentially making hamburgers out of cards that are available to you in the middle of the table. You're purchasing ingredients or picking up ingredients. If you put some ingredients down, you draw back up to four. And you're trying to, the goal is to get specific burger combinations. So there's a chicken avo burger, which is a chicken patty and avocado on a burger. So if you get those elements and you match what the card says, you have to make it a certain height, you know, which is how many elements are inside the burger buns. And so if you do that, you can turn it in and get the money that's associated with it. So there's a lot of cool things with Burger Up. And we've, like I said, we did a review on it. It's so solid. And I'm really glad we busted that one out, because today, we're recording on Sunday, I was thinking about how much I wanted to play Burger Up again. So
yeah. Awesome.
So what'd you play, man?
Well, I finally got to do some board gaming this week. It's been a little bit light lately, and it's still not as much as I'd want. But, you know, I got a chance to play some games Friday night with my friends Grant and Shane. And we'll be talking about one of those in the review. But also, I got to break out a game on Friday during school. I had a group of girls meeting in my room, and it was during a lunchtime, and they were like, we've got about 30 minutes. What should we do? So I broke out Blank Slate, okay, which is a game that was sent over to us by USAopoly.
Yeah.
And have you ever seen the show The Match Game? Have you ever seen that game show?
Yes.
So it's like the bonus round version of that, where they give you a word and then a blank either before or after that word. So it might say something like school blank. And so everybody that's at the table has to write in one word on their own little personal dry erase board. that would fill in that blank. And then they put it face down on the table and you flip it over and you get points based on how it matches. So if you match a bunch of people, you get 1 point. But if you manage to match just one other person, you get 3 points. And so you keep going through the game doing the exact same thing until somebody reaches 25 points. And that's it. It's a very basic game. The components of it are really well made. The little dry erase boards have a little, like a lip to them. So the dry erase is embedded into, and it has like a cardboard edge. Mm-hmm. And that's actually better than I think like Wits and Wagers, whenever we play it on like a felt table, sometimes it'll rub off. This wouldn't happen.
Yeah.
And while that seems like a minor little thing, it is really cool. And all the little, the cards just kind of, it all just looks very nice. It's because it doesn't have a lot going on with it. I think, you know, it's going to be a one-time play game. I don't think, you know, some party games like Wits and Wagers, we crank out a game of that in like 20 minutes and then we want to play again. We played one round and you played a 25 and we finished just in time. And I think that would have been it. I think that approach starts to wear thin. That being said, we had a good time and all the girls were enjoying it. And, you know, they were all trying pretty hard, except one group was just writing ridiculous things. And you know what? Enjoy the game however you will. I think it worked really well. We played 8 teams for that game. And that was a lot of people to have, you know, the opportunity to do some one-on-one matching and matching with other people. It says it plays like 3 to 8. I don't think it would be nearly as good at like anything less than 6. I haven't played it.
So it's very distinctively a party game.
Yes, definitely. Okay. And, you know, probably, like I said, something to filler or start the night. And I think it takes almost no time to explain the rules, like 30 seconds probably. And then, you know, you get in the groove and you keep going. And, you know, like those games like Wits and Wagers where, you know, you're kind of talking and considering, it plays very similar to that. It's just that there's not a whole lot of variety. I think it's one, if you manage to find it on sale or, you know, if you're just looking, if you don't have a game like Wits and Wagers and you're looking for something, you know, simpler than that even, it's a good thing. I'm glad I have it. I'm glad we can play it. It's one that will break out again later at school. But I don't think it's like going to blow your mind by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah. Well, I think, you know, some of those party games, it's fun when you get people who are not big into gaming, and then you've got that game on hand that you can say, oh, you know what? Let's just play this, because I know it's the barrier to entry. We've talked about this before on the show. Like, the barrier to entry is not that big. It's going to be grasped quickly, and we're going to have some laughs around the table. You know, so I think having those, especially having different ones, because if somebody's like, we've played Wits and Wagers the past 3 times we've come over, you know, having something that's slightly different is nice to to bust out.
I would still recommend, if you're looking for a game like this, I would recommend Wits and Wagers more. I would also recommend Say Anything over this game, which we've reviewed before.
I've played that one, yeah.
Yeah, I would definitely recommend those first. But if you're, let's say you own Say Anything, and like you said, you're starting to get tired of it, and you're not a trivia buff, then go grab a copy of Blank Slate, and you'll have a good time with it.
That's cool. Very cool, man. Well, we are going to transition now into an interview that I did with David Lee of A La Carte Games. He's going to tell us about a brand new Kickstarter that's going to be launching this week. So be sure to check out this interview, and we'll be back in just a couple minutes. Hey, I'm here with David Lee with A La Carte Games. How are you doing today, David?
I'm good. Thanks for having me, Ryan.
excellent, man. We are here to talk about your game company and also a new game that's coming to Kickstarter starting on the 30th of August. So why don't you tell our listeners a little about A La Carte Games and kind of what you guys are doing?
Yeah, so my brother and I, Philip and myself, we are the owners of A La Carte Games, and our first game called What's for Dinner will be debuting soon. We are from Dayton, Ohio, so just a micro publisher, and we had a booth recently at Origins Game Fair in Columbus, Ohio, demoing our game. And just giving people some information about the game. It's about food, so it really drew a lot of people in, and kind of a fun, casual, light palate cleanser game, we like to call it, for family. Anyone that can read can play the game, so pretty easy to learn.
So both Rick and I stopped by and we visited your booth because one of the things that drew me in personally was the fact that the box for What's for Dinner, which is the name of the game, is this square hamburger. It great box art, really cool presents. So tell us about What's for Dinner and tell us kind of some of the background of the gameplay for this one.
Yeah, so simply kind of how it plays is... each player is given different traits that they are kind of food restrictions and things like that, where they kind of have to stick to a certain diet or they can break their diet. They get certain meal points for successfully keeping to that diet. They also acquire, there's different meal cards in the food pyramid common area in the middle of the table that have meal points on them as well. And players collect those by either using wallet cards from their hand. Will have a hand of wallet cards that have money and other abilities, or their cravings for that turn, if they will. They roll a food die. It's a D6, six-sided die, and it has all the food groups. So it has a strawberry for the fruit, has broccoli for veggie, has a steak for meat, it has cheese for dairy, wheat for wheat, and the sixth side is bacon for kind of the fats and oils of the food pyramid.
Now, everybody loves bacon. Tell us a little about the bacon and kind of what that does in the game, because it's got kind of almost like a special ability, correct?
Yeah. So how you acquire these different meal cards? And there's a lot of different Chinese buffet. Obviously, you gotta have a cheeseburger and some pizzas and gluten-free pizzas and funny things like that. So each meal card has really what has the food in the game, the category. So rolling the food die, you get to acquire for free. Matching symbol, the bacon in the game, to answer your question, is a wild. So it lets you get anything you want. In this game, bacon is not meat per se. It's whimsical, it's magical. It's bacon. So
just like bacon is in real life. So tell me about these trait cards. I thought this was a really cool aspect of the game. You're given three trait cards at the beginning of the game, and then you get to pick two of those trait cards. So how does this help a player or dictate how a player builds out their meal during the course of the game?
Yeah. So a player's dealt three and they will discard one because you could have one that conflicts. And then there's hidden information in the game where a player will choose one of those two traits left to be hidden the entire game until final scoring when the game ends. The one that is face up, the trait card that's face up, that all players know that they are vegan or vegetarian, or maybe they're a bodybuilder, something to that effect, or maybe they have IBS or something painful like that. The one that's face up will score double points. Because players can defensively not help you achieve that trait so easily. And then the hidden trait is just worth face value because players really don't know what you're going for. Players aren't really forthright with, or people, I should say, with everything. Some of the cards you have to be, it has to be a hidden trait, like baconophobia, where you can't have bacon, which just sounds horrible in real life, or maybe a dumpster diver, just fun things like that where they get to fish in the dumpster box at the end of the game. So you mentioned the cheeseburger box, the bottom of the box. If players don't want to acquire certain meal cards, they can actually throw a meal into the bottom of the box, which is a dumpster. So the entire box, everything in the box can be used in the game. You could even use the top as a die tray if you really wanted to.
Yeah, the box and just how that was all created, it looks so good just seeing it in person at Origins. Love the design of the box, and I love the fact that there was this dumpster motif at the bottom of the box that you actually use during the course of the game, which is really cool. So a la carte games and what's for dinner, this is all kind of food theme inspired. What drew you to this theme?
Well, really just an actual real life problem. My brother's gaming group and many others and families always has the problem of, hey, what do you guys want to get for dinner? And there's always a problem of, the discussion. What about Chinese? Oh, I had that last night. What about pizza? We have pizza every night. So it was kind of not a bad problem, but a problem that normal people, family, game groups have. And they were just kind of shooting the breeze of how can we actually fix, maybe we can make a game of this, fix the problem. And then a year went by and I was like, Philip, have you ever have you gone through and made up this game? And another year would go by and I said, okay, I'm going to make up this game. So I sat down at a pizza place, if you will, for a couple hours and just thumbed through tons of different ideas I had with the game. And that was essentially kind of the birth of the game, the origination of it.
So this game is going to be on Kickstarter starting August 30th. You're going to be able to get in there and help you guys fund this game. For one of our listeners who may be new to Kickstarter or may be kind of hesitant to put money into a Kickstarter, what would you kind of elevator pitch them to check out What's for Dinner?
Sure. So if someone is just completely not familiar with Kickstarter, it's an all or nothing crowdfunding campaign. So a certain goal, if it's not reached, there's no money, changes hands. So hopefully we fund, of course, and very well. What people would do is they would pledge or support a certain dollar amount. So like the game would be like $19, just an example. And players would pledge that money. And we would give what comes in the box. If people pledge a certain amount, we will add stretch goals. We'll add cards to the game, make the components better, the box better, so people will get the absolute best quality product that we can. There's risk and rewards as far as really late with shipping the game. A lot of Kickstarters or people maybe aren't really prepared, like they don't have, like they need the money to fund to get the artwork done. So like our artwork and all that is like 98% done. We will have a thing on the Kickstarter where people can create their own meal card potentially. So just things like that. But that's really just the nuts and bolts of Kickstarter. Usually people get a discounted price for being an early adapter to try to get the game, and they will get the game before it would go into mainstream distribution. So that's another positive of Kickstarter.
Very cool. Well, David, we're excited about What's for Dinner and excited to check out the Kickstarter when it launches. We will include a link to the Kickstarter on our website, through our social media, and in the show notes for this episode. So be sure to check it on August 30th when it launches and check out What's for Dinner. Thanks so much for joining us, David, and I hope you have a great night.
Thanks for having me, Ryan. You too.
Rick White. We are back.
Yes, we are. Yes, we are.
So let me ask you a question. So let's say we live in this alternate timeline.
Mm-hmm.
A timeline where apes ruled the world and we were nothing but the ape slaves.
Oh, snap.
Yeah. I'm talking about Planet Apes, son.
Oh, yeah, you are. And you spent a long time on a spaceship only to find out that you didn't really go anywhere. Spoiler alert.
Oh, crap. What if somebody was listening and they were like, I'm going to listen to this episode because it has no Planet Apes spoilers, and so therefore I'll just listen to this episode.
There you go.
To get me through the day. Or what if somebody was like, I've spent 20 years staying away from spoilers for Planet Apes. I'm going to listen to this episode, then watch it.
Yeah. It came out in 1968. I think you get like a 50-year... Yeah, we've passed the 50-year spoiler protection clause.
Yeah, we're good. We're good. Nobody can sue us.
Yeah, we're good.
Also, we have nothing.
Yeah, Ryan, I played Planet of the Apes, the board game, this past weekend with my friends Grant and Shane. I'm here to tell my tale.
Cool. Well, so a couple quick things. This is a board game that's published from IDW Games. This is they do tons of licensed games and things like that. This is a cooperative game, correct?
Yeah. Yes, you are. Okay. It's a very odd cooperative game. You're playing the role of Taylor, who's the main character now. Nobody, at least at our game night, remembered his name, so we just called him Charlton Heston throughout. Sure. Because that's important. But you are playing different aspects of his psyche. So, like, I was the clever Taylor. There is a Commander Taylor, and there's I forget the other two. There was one. The other one started with a C. And then there's one that started with a D. Oh, I found it. Hold on. Here we go. You can edit this out.
No, I'm going to leave this
very
in.
Very prepared.
I'm going to leave this in.
Oh, that's how it works better, yeah. Clever Taylor, Cynical Taylor, Commander Taylor, and then the Defiant Taylor. And we said he was so defiant, he fought the alliteration. And each of those has special... little abilities related to them, like mine. I got to re-roll dice, which is a big deal, and things like that. Some of them give you more actions on a turn and things like that.
So is this a cooperative winning game as far as like,
yes,
you know, some,
in order for you to...
I think somebody asked this on, I saw this question on Facebook the other day in a board game group. They were asking a question about, you know, co-op games that actually have a definitive winner, not... the group wins. Kind of like, you know, Forbidden Island, Forbidden Desert, the group wins.
Right.
Is this one where you have a definitive winner,
no,
even though you're working together?
No, you are all on the same team because you're all the same person. So,
yeah,
you know, you are working together to try to progress through the plot of the movie. So if you've seen the movie, you kind of know where the game is going. You know, you crash land, and then each of the major things of the movie happens up until the very end where you get to the Statue of Liberty, and there's a final obstacle that you fill out or that you have to tackle, and then you either win or lose if you've survived. And so have you ever played Elder Sign, Ryan?
I have not. I know the game, but I have not actually played it.
So Planet of the Apes is very much the game. It feels very much like the game Elder Sign with a Planet of the Apes skin on it.
Okay.
So basically what happens is you go through these different challenges, and there's a few minor challenges that just kind of help you reset after you've been through a major challenge. They kind of give you bonuses and... prepare you for the next set. But then the major challenges are big scenes from the film, and there are little pieces of that scene broken up onto what they call encounter cards. And each encounter card has a set of dice rules that you need to meet in order to defeat them and to progress your Taylor or Charlton Heston character on the board. There's a fate board where you are placed usually at like position 13, and an ape from the movie is placed at position 7. And as you succeed, your character moves further forward. As you fail, the ape moves further forward, and you're trying to get to 0 before the ape does, in order to not suffer some bad consequences, some of which at the end of the game are that you just lose the game, game over.
Gotcha. Is there a point in time in the game where you can actually lose prior to reaching the end of the game?
Yes. That would be one of them. So it's like, the major scenes, number 6 and 7, if the ape gets there, you will lose. Also, if all of your characters are defeated, because you have situations in which you might take hit points, even if you all take so many hit points that you're defeated, then you lose. And then there's a Statue of Liberty token that moves less, but it never resets. The Taylor and ape figurines will reset for every major scene. So there's 4 major scenes that you have to do the encounters for. And so they start at 13 and 7 for each scene that you get to. But the Statue of Liberty moves the whole time. And so if it gets to the end, you lose. And so that part, there's a kind of like, you know, in most cooperative games, there's several ways to lose, one way to win.
Yeah. Now, we were talking about this previously. While you weren't enamored with the game, what were some of your thoughts on like the pros and cons of this game, Planet of the Apes, the board game?
You know, the big part of it is it's dice based. So each of these encounter cards, you take a set of dice and you roll them. And within the number of rolls, you have to meet the conditions. And you've got a lot of cards that you'll acquire as the game goes on that might let you re-roll or might give you more dice to roll and things like that. What I don't like about that, and the same thing I don't like about Elder Sign, is that to an extent, there's only so much you can do, because, you know, you're just rolling dice, and if they don't behave, then you don't win. This game is a lot more forgiving than Elder Sign. Okay. Elder Sign, I've lost every time I think I've played it, because it's so hard to get the results on the dice that you're supposed to get. And in this one, we only started to fail our encounter cards when we got to the later rounds. We had enough stuff in order to succeed, so it didn't feel unfair, but it still, like, it also kind of felt like we knew we were going to win. We did have some lucky rolling, I think, and maybe another round through would work well. The art is really cool. For the game, it's very well done. And there are some parts of it that are very thematic. Like, I liked at the very beginning of the game, spoiler alert, I guess maybe, I don't think so, but you're shipwrecked, and so it's the first card that you're going to flip over. Everybody's going to flip it over, so you're going to be fine. But you take resources, and then you take like 1 to 5 resources, and then you roll that many dice. And the number of odd numbers that you get is how many hit points you will start the game with. So you could get injured at the beginning of the game based on how many resources you're taking. And that was really a cool mechanic, I thought, because it, to me, felt like, you know, you're collecting resources on this foreign planet and there's, like, some danger involved in it. I thought that was a cool way to start the game instead of just saying, like, every player gets 3 supplies. I thought that was really cool.
That's cool. You mentioned the artwork. Is this, you know, some movie or IP based games, you know, will just take artwork from the movie, just like lift it straight off of the scene. You know, is this the case, or was this new artwork that was done? Is this just clips from the movie on the cards, or how does this work out?
No, it's not just like pictures from the movie. It's, you know, they are illustrated. They look very familiar. I want to say that there's like a comic or something, or maybe this is just like similar to the poster art. But the artwork looks very familiar to me. Okay. But has kind of that 60s, 70s retro sci-fi feel to it. Yeah. And it's well done. There's no live images or anything. They're all hand-drawn things.
Yeah.
and really cool. I like the illustrations. And each encounter card has like quotes from the movie on it. And so you're going through it. If you're a Planet of the Apes fan, you're going to probably enjoy this because you'll be like, oh yeah, I remember that part. And, those different things, you'll really enjoy, those experiences.
So this is definitely a game for the Planet of the Apes fans or a person who is kind of a movie buff, maybe even a person who really enjoys Elder Signs, but could use a, you know, fresh take on it.
Well, yeah, and I think it's, if you like Planet of the Apes, I do think you'll enjoy it. Another problem for me is that I question the replayability of the game. You know, with Elder Sign, different things can pop up, but like, you know, the order of what things are going to happen. Like we've played in the minor scenes, you know, how you're going to be like, is a bad consequence going to happen? Each of those between the major scenes and the minor scene, you might get healed. Some bad things might happen. And so if you've played the game, you know what stuff is going to happen on those. And so I think it ruins a little bit of the surprise because I can strategize about everything that's about to happen. And maybe that's a minor complaint, but I do think that it would not be nearly as fun going through it the second time. There's also in the last set of cards that you have three cards and you don't know which one you're going to pick for the very last round. And so you pick one at random and there's like an end game condition. And so each player has to try to beat the end game. And if one of them survives, the team wins. We actually ended up in a result where there was only one card in those stack of three that could have made us lose the game because of how we had played. Even if the negative consequences had happened to everyone, we still would have won the game. But we did draw the one that kind of gave us some risk, and it was interesting because we all had to roll dice, and we got hit. Basically, I survived, and the other two did not. So we kind of survived by the skin of our teeth, and it was really fun. But also, like, I think that would have been a really lame ending if we had drawn one of the other two cards and would have been like, oh, well, we win. We don't have to do anything.
Yeah. Cool. That sounds like, I've told you before that Josiah is a really big Planet of the Apes fan. In fact, a couple of years ago, he picked up Planet of the Apes, the DVD, probably about a year, year and a half ago. He picked it up because my aunt gave it to him for Christmas one year. And it wasn't the remastered version. It was just the straight-up late 60s version, Charlton Heston. He watched it and loved it. He was like, this is really cool. I wish it looked newer, but this is really cool. So I got to inform him, actually, there's a whole new set of Planet of the Apes movies. And so he's actually watched
those and got disappointed. No.
He's watched the newer ones with us and his grandparents, which is pretty cool because my mother is a huge Planet of the Apes fan. So I actually want to try this is a copy, just so everybody knows we're very clear on this stuff. This was a provided copy. This copy was provided by IDW Games for the review. And so this is something that I would like to actually experience this with him and my mom and see how they react to it as huge Planet of the Apes fans, you know, and see how they like it, you know, see,
yeah.
I could definitely understand the replayability. If you already know what's coming up, that variability is very, very important when you're talking about a game that you're going to bring to the table a lot. It almost seems like this is one of those event games. You know, yeah. I've got a couple games that, like, even though the replayability on Colt Express is great, I still only bring that out when we have big groups or when it's very, like, just chilling around the table, eating, you know, nachos or whatever. It's not a game that I'm going to bust out every single night. You know,
no.
And so Planet of the Apes might be one of those games that you just play with certain people and just come together and say, hey, we haven't played this in a year. Let's put it on the table.
Yeah. And maybe that might be if you're a big Planet of the Apes fan, it might be something that, yeah, you play after your brain has forgotten what it did, like what happens in each round. I think that could definitely be helpful. It is, you know, it's not that complicated, I guess. It does have a big rule book. It has a lot of symbols that they're not too bad, but when you at first look at the game, you're like, what does all this mean? And I think the rule book could have been organized a little bit better. But yeah, I think Josiah, if he had that experience with the movie, I think he'll enjoy the game. And as long as the dice go his way, it could ruin the fun if they go poorly. I mean, you got a Planet of the Apes fan out there. Give this one a shot, you know, and try it out. I think, you know, they'll enjoy it. You might less so.
Gotcha. Yeah. This may not be a good fit for you, but it, you know, definitely there are people out there that will dig it because of the theme and the movie.
Totally. Cool.
Awesome, Rick. Thanks so much. We're going to probably have a written review of this later, you know, in September sometime. So be sure to stay tuned to oneboardfamily.com for that. And if I get a chance to play it, I'll actually try to throw in my take playing with my mom and my son. That might be a lot of fun. So
definitely.
Very cool, man. Well, as always, you can find us on everything from YouTube to Twitter to Instagram and Facebook at One Board Family. And of course, stay up to date with news, reviews, and interviews over on oneboardfamily.com. If you like what you hear, if you are a subscriber to the podcast and dig this, there's two things that we would ask you to do. First, just review us. Review us on iTunes, review us on whatever the podcast service that you use. Those reviews help us get more exposure to people who may be looking for a good gaming podcast. The second thing is, if you dig it, head over to Patreon, patreon.com/oneboardfamily, and consider supporting us for $1, $5, or $10 a month. That's a way that we can continue to make the show better. It's a way that we're able to afford new games, the latest games, to make sure that we bring you timely reviews on the newest things that are coming out. So thanks so much for joining us, and until next time, we'll see you at the table.
Media,
where we all
bring something
to the table.
Pull up a chair
at punchboardmedia.com.
What was that? Is that, are you starting the new segment?
No, I'm singing our theme song. Can't you tell?
Oh, golly, what is that?
I think we should let me do little songs for the beginning of each segment.
Yeah, I feel like that would be great.
Yeah.
That would be real good.
What have we been playing?
There we go. We're going to have a lot of unsubscribers.
If that's not at the beginning of the segment on this episode, I'm done. I quit.
I'm done. I think I'm done.